It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so it seems to me, based solely on what I see in popular culture and entertainment news and so forth, Jerry Seinfeld's kind of a dick. I don't know that he's always been that way, but post his TV show, he always just seems kind of like an entitled asshole.
Okay.
He thinks college crowds are too PC now because for some reason he had to stick in a joke that somebody was gay for no reason and it did not go over well. And his latest one, and the reason I bring this up, because it's a general case, but this just came up, is some guy who lives in New York wrote an essay on LinkedIn, which is not a thing I thought you could do, about how he loves New York, but it's very difficult and he's moving away because it is so hard to live there right now, and because he's honestly worried that even once, whenever COVID passes, it'll be really hard for New York to get back to what it was. And the things he loved about it, which was largely that, like, right out his front door was great food and great theater and great stuff like this, isn't there anymore, and it's just really hard. And then Jerry Seinfeld felt a need to post an op-ed in the New York Times saying this guy was full of shit and not a real New Yorker and what the fuck is wrong with him. He's, quote, some putz on LinkedIn. And that's what made the news. And it mostly made the news because everybody's like, what the fuck is the problem with Jerry Seinfeld? Also, isn't he presumably spending the entire quarantine in his huge mansion compound in the Hamptons? So what the fuck does he know about it? But anyway, I bring this up, which seems pointless and random, because it is another one of these examples that I have seen in mostly rich and famous people. When you become significant enough and everybody thinks you have a lot to say and you clearly have done well, made good life decisions because you are wealthy and successful now, there frequently comes a point where you start, you seem really bored. Are you okay?
I just keep hearing noises over there that I'm not used to hearing. I'm sorry.
It's probably that cat that I bought you and told your wife not to tell you about.
I apologize. I was just...
There comes a point where you, to put it in succinct terms, start to believe your own hype.
Yeah.
It has been manifest so many times during the pandemic with a lot of celebrities of things that they thought just, say, doing a poor rendition of a Beatles song somehow will give comfort to those in need and so forth like this. But this is a thing that I frequently watch out for and that I try and remind myself. This is a very important lesson because you don't have to be rich and famous to fall into this trap. All you have to do is have people around you who appreciate and take stock in your words and your advice. Say, for instance, if you're the sort of person that runs a really shitty podcast and yet you have a small devoted following that actually listen and actually find what you say interesting and entertaining, or to put little, not to put too much of a head on it, a lot of people confide in me and a lot of people consider me to give good advice. Some people refer to me in various ways as a guru to them, jokingly, but still a thing. And it's very easy for me to start thinking that means I'm wise. I'm very smart. I know things. Oh, sorry, my dasher William is approaching the house. Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Hello? All right, great. Just leave it on the porch, please. That'd be wonderful. Thanks. They have on these apps where you can say, just no contact, please leave it on the porch. Sometimes they don't listen. It's probably because he's named William.
Yeah, that's it right there. You got to watch out for Williams for sure.
But this is a thing that I worry about a lot and I try and pay attention to is at the point that you start thinking you are important, you can start you can get full of yourself and you can just start assuming that what you think or what you have to say has more value than others. And it's something I need to watch out for because for whatever reason, a fair number of people often consider me to be a good source of wisdom and advice, which may or may not be true, but I can't go around saying, you know what? I give good advice. Ask me something. No. Anyway, that's just a life lesson that has popped into my head recently. Thanks to Jerry Seinfeld. Because he's kind of a dick now, and I don't want to be like that.
I don't think anybody considers me a reliable source of any kind of advice or information. I don't think anyone ever has, so.
Well,
that's a good thing.
I'm not surprised by that statement. And I think the reason that's the case is the same reason why people often do consider me like that. And it has nothing to do with actual wisdom. People, I was trying to explain this because I was talking to my massage therapist and I said something about how I frequently end up in parental and patriarchal roles in my social circles. And was going sort of through the history of that and how the few times when that's not the case, I feel very uncomfortable and often like lash out because I'm not used to being the young one in the group or whatever. But she was like, why do you think that is that people put you in that sort of patriarchal position? And I had to say to her, are you kidding me? I'm practically your therapist. I've been seeing this same massage therapist for like 15 years and she has confided everything in me. I talked her through it, like so many things. And that's not unusual. And what I think it comes down to, and some people have said as much, I'm a freaking open book. I tell everybody everything about me, good or bad, all the time, whether I should or should not, constantly. And so two things happen then. One, the odds of me saying something that resonates with someone else is greater. I've had multiple people come out to me as transgender because I've been very open about my own gender things. So they figured I would be non-judgmental and all that. But also, the amount of shit I'm willing to talk about, I think it increases the odds in people's minds that they can talk to me about something that I won't be judgy. Which I hope is true. I work hard not to judge people or, you know, be bothered by what you, that's the thing you're into, you're a monster, that kind of stuff. And I think that's why people initially approach me with this kind of thing. You are an incredibly private person, so I think the odds of you happening to say something that they're like, oh, I'm like that too, and he felt he could share that with me here, much lower. And you aren't open in that way and you don't pry into other, because I also ask people things and stuff like that more. So, I mean, you sort of don't invite people to confide in you. Whereas that's all I do all day.
Well, I mean, I ask people questions. I mean, a lot of times when I meet someone, I'm asking them what other people regard as pretty personal questions, like within the first 5 minutes of knowing them. And I have to say most of the time, people seem comfortable answering them, but you're right. I'm pretty much only going to do that. I'm not going to do that to everybody I meet, for example. There's like only particular circumstances where that's true. I think I also have a lifestyle that that people are suspicious of. I think when you're a vegetarian, people are suspicious. I think when you don't drink, people are suspicious. I think they tend to think you're a judgmental person.
That is a good point. You have a lot of behaviors that in a lot of cases elicit judgmental tendencies or elicit subconscious guilt tendencies from others. There are a lot of vegetarians out there who judge people for not being vegetarians. There's also a lot of people out there who deep down feel a little guilty about eating meat, and when confronted with a vegetarian, feel weird about it. And the combination of the two makes people sometimes wary about that. And the same thing with sober people.
Yeah, so...
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, given the right social situation, like, if I'm in a social situation where it's acceptable or expected that people will, talk to each other, like at a dinner party or something like that, you know, where there's kind of an expectation that a person's going to ask questions. I ask all kinds of questions. I can get to know a lot about a person in a very short period of time. And most people don't seem put off by it. But would I be that way with, say, my massage therapist if I had one? I don't know if I would.
Well, it took a few years. And it is true. You're like a dog with a bone when you feel you're on a good question hunt there. Driving insane.
Right, but like...
You're not particularly... reciprocal, at least in a, you're very careful to not talk about anything too personal for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to get better at that because I realize that.
Are you?
Well, sure. I mean, for years I've been trying to get better at that because I don't know when I started to figure it out. I don't think I figured it out in high school. It was probably sometime in college. I started to realize that I would ask people questions because I was interested. Right. And I wouldn't really talk about myself only because I was interested in this person. And as long as they were willing to answer my questions, I was just going to keep asking them. And there were a few instances where it did seem to put people off. And I started to wonder, well, does this person feel like I'm interrogating them or because I'm not saying things about myself, that this is some kind of trick, right? That I'm trying to get the goods on them and I'm not going to give any goods on me. And so. So I
apologize. It probably looked like I wasn't paying attention. I realized I did not tell my wife that there is food sitting on the porch and I should do that. All right. No, sorry. I am listening.
That's fine. But I started to realize that it might come off as me being manipulative or another thing is like analyzing them, putting them on a microscope, like objectifying them or whatever, instead of actually trying to connect with them and, you know, build some kind of a relationship with them. So
this is fascinating because, I mean, we have talked at great length about your tendency not to be very open and with your personal stuff and to keep a lot of things personal. And I personally, I'm using the word personal too much. I myself have seen that change within you with regard to our relationship. But at no point have we talked about you having an active desire to change that about you. I was not aware.
Well, but see, that's the tricky bit, is I didn't really want to change it. I just felt like I should change it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I was perfectly happy just, you know, asking people questions. And some people really like to talk about themselves. So a lot of times that worked out great. They didn't care about what I had to say about myself. I didn't care about what I had to say about myself. So we just went with it. But there were a few times where a person seemed to put off. And sometimes when a person feels put off, it's because they just don't want to answer questions and that's fine. But there's a middle group that seemed okay answering questions. They weren't put off with being asked. They were put off with it being a one-sided, you know, thing. So I realized, well, maybe I need to learn how to, you know, to put them at ease by letting them know I'm willing to share whatever. I'm willing to talk about certain things.
At least to the degree that you're questioning them about things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
don't ask a question of somebody you wouldn't be willing to answer yourself.
That's exactly right, which I never do. I mean, I don't Because the thing is, there are certain things that I don't want to know about a person. So I'm not going to ask them a question that I would be uncomfortable them asking me. But I do ask questions that, like, the greater culture seems to be uncomfortable with, right? Like, I'll ask questions about politics or religion, for example, that other people are like, oh gosh, you shouldn't ask about that. That's a, you know, that's a dangerous topic. But it's not dangerous. It's never dangerous for me, because I don't judge people for their beliefs or whatever. So it's, I'm usually quite fascinated by it. But some people are put off by it because of that. So anyway, so I realized I needed to do a better job at maybe sharing a little bit more, but maybe 30 years now that I've been like consciously trying to do it, I don't think I've ever gotten good at it, because either I'll talk too much. I'll end up just sitting there talking about myself. I'll get on some kind of tangent or something. And I'll just go and go and go. And then before I'm done, I realize I just talked for like 30 minutes about myself. The most boring subject to me is talking about myself. And I just did that. Or I won't talk too much, but I won't talk enough. Or I'll talk probably the right amount, but the stuff I said wasn't right. I'm just bad at it, is what I'm saying.
I think that last one is maybe more in your head than outside, but it's a definite thing, and it's something I struggle with, and I'm somebody who tends to both be very open and elicit such response from others, but it's really hard to find that balance, because they feel like separate things. Either I'm here to learn about you, or I'm here to tell you about me, and I need to do an equal of both. But it's hard to get into a mindset of just back and forth. And I have found in conversations with everyone, including you and I and with my wife, 80% of the time, a long conversation is you tell a little anecdote, and then I tell a little anecdote, and then you tell a little anecdote, and then I tell a little anecdote. And I'm like, and on a certain level, that's fair and all, but it's like, sometimes I'm just interested in telling you the anecdotes, and the price I pay for that is listening to yours. and vice versa. And you, in this case, does not mean you specifically.
No, I know.
With everybody. But I mean, and I'm like, that doesn't feel right. But then in an attempt to get sort of back and forth, sometimes I'll do things like I'll go super Socratic with it and ask a lot of questions and make commentary there. And I find often in that case, people feel like they're being led to something.
Yeah. That happens too. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I also find that sometimes they get really mad at me about that. And sometimes when they get real mad at me about that, and I go back and think about the conversation, I was unconsciously trying to lead them to something. And it's difficult. It's a difficult thing to do. But no, I mean, there's a definite change in how open you are on the podcast that is demonstrably noticeable over the years. I think someone could go back and listen to earlier things where I try and ask you things and you're like, that's not a thing I talk about, or like, and then things now where a similar thing comes up and you actually have things to say. You definitely still have lines. But I have noticed times where you're talking and I'm like, this does not seem like something he would have spoken on before. Interesting.
Well, I imagine, I mean, it's been so many podcasts. I imagine.
I hope you know how many. It's going to come up in a minute.
I can think of only one time where, after listening, I thought to myself, yeah, if I could go back, I would not have talked about that. And it wasn't even that big a deal. It's just, I just probably wouldn't have. Most of the time, I.
Interesting, because there have been at least a dozen times where you have told me afterwards, I can't believe I talked about that on the air. I'll admit, at no point did you say, I wish I hadn't. But right. there were frequently times where you sent emails that you were surprised that you had been as open as you had been.
Yep. Well, no, that's true. Yep. But like you just pointed out, it, not in a way where I wished I could go back. I can think
of it's something great about being very open and then not having the sky fall on you afterwards. You're like, okay, I'm going to share this. And like nobody starts judging. Nobody freaks out. And you're like, yay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of times I'm not really expecting anything like that. I just think it's boring. You know, nobody's going to be interested in this. So I'm not going to, I don't just refrain from talking about things that I think are personal or that I think are going to have some kind of bad consequence. I refrain from talking about things that I suspect people are going to be bored by.
And that's a dangerous road to go down.
Yeah. Because how do I know?
Yes.
And I don't know.
Here's the thing. Yeah. If you're super, super boring, people probably won't hang out with you. But if you then are like, okay, I'll only talk about the interesting things and then people won't find me so boring, then you're essentially just putting a fake you forward.
Yeah, that's true. That's right.
Because you think they'll think you're boring otherwise and not hang out with you, which I understand as a thing. But knowing you as I do, that's not what you want to do. That's not how you want to live. You want to be yourself, and you want people who want to spend time with you to do it, and people who don't to leave.
Right. And also my strategy in not being boring isn't to come up with interesting things to say. It's to not say anything at all.
Yes. Which people can find boring.
Yeah, that's right.
You and I, in our years as friends, have run into similar tensions I have with my brother along these lines. My brother is not apt to, I mean, he will answer questions, but he is much more trying to get info out of you and doesn't share a lot about himself. And I still haven't figured out, but some aspect of that really puts me off and has put a strain on our relationship. And you and I have had that in the past. Unlike my brother and I, you and I have evolved in that, and it's not at where it was anymore. And I appreciate that you're more willing to talk. I also should say, as we've established, this podcast has taught me a lot about you, and possibly the world a lot about you. You are a bad judge of what is boring for you to talk about.
Yeah, that's probably true.
You have gone on at length about stuff I could not give a shit about. And then there'd be other things that you're like just trying to say in passing. And we're all like, tell us more. What is that? And you're like, what? No, that's not it. No, it is. Do it. Funnel cakes, people dying in Jim McGregor's chair.
No, that's terrible stuff, really. I mean,
but it's interesting. It's really interesting.
No. Well, I have always, for as long as I can remember, I have had issues with saying things that I later learn after I've said it is a controversial view, you know. I mean, I'm very open about being an anarchist, and I'm sure as you can imagine, that's not a popular thing to be. I mean, for one thing, there's all kinds of misconceptions about what that might may or may not mean. But even if people know what I mean by it, they still can really find it unpleasant or distasteful or whatever else. And that's just one. I mean, just about pretty much all my views on science, religion, whatever it is, if I try to talk to people about it, very often meets with, you know,
all that stuff you go on about how Hitler was right. I mean, yeah, a lot of people.
Come on, don't even don't do that.
It's terrible when you do that all the time.
I'm just saying, yeah, I have, that's a problem in my life, is running into people who think that some of my opinions are distasteful or even offensive, which I don't know what to do about that. I mean, they're opinions that I sincerely hold and think about. I don't want to offend people. I honestly don't. But what am I going to do?
I tell you what you do. At a certain point, you decide what people you're going to worry about offending and what ones you aren't going to worry about offending.
Oh, yeah. I established that a long time ago. But that doesn't mean I should go around talking about it to everybody just to make people mad. I mean, I don't have to share my views with people.
No.
I don't have to tell
by and large, the people that get offended by that kind of stuff, I just don't sort of hang out with them anymore. But I also don't tend to worry about what I say at first, because if I say it first and they're like, wow, that's awful, I'm like, all right, maybe you and I, not so much. Or you know, at best, maybe you and I, just not this topic anymore. I just recently had a wonderful conversation with my mother where I had to remind her, because this is a thing, she and I can talk about just about anything except weight. Her views on weight and weight loss and how it relates to health are incredibly different from mine, and I find it incredibly frustrating when she talks. And this is not a thing where she's like talking to me about losing weight. No, it's her talking about what she needs to do and how she's messing up, and it drives me crazy. And I said to her, I said, we can talk about anything. This was in a different context. I said, you can talk to me about anything you need to talk to, because, you know, she's still going through the loss of a husband. It's been 4 months, so. And I said, you can call and talk to me about anything. And she said, except weight. And I said, no, you can talk to me about weight. You need to be prepared for the fact that it's going to be an argument and both of us are going to end it unhappy and having convinced neither of the other one of anything. But if that's a conversation you want to have, we can do that.
I'm very fortunate to have, you know, I mean, people in my life I can talk to, like, my wife, of course, but you, you know, Jazz, you know, we have conversations. Sometimes they're very, you know, we don't always agree on everything. Sometimes they're very,
we know, we've seen the blog.
Sometimes they're very difficult, not difficult in terms of like we're angry at each other, but difficult like to try to understand what the other person's saying. But it's like, except for her and a few other people, you, my wife, a lot of times people, when you have a conversation like that and it starts to get difficult, they won't stick it out, right? They won't work at it with you. They'll just feel like this is too much work and they'll stop. And so the conversation never finishes.
Well, and I had that at a certain point. And it mostly has to do with how difficult is the conversation versus how much I'm invested in whatever the topic is.
Right, but yes, and I know.
Sometimes you and I get into a thing and I'm like, we're not making headway. And frankly, I'm not nearly as into this topic as we've taken it already.
But all that means is conversations do end. But sometimes conversations end in what I would regard as prematurely. I mean, to me, that's not a premature end when you reach a point where there's no real point in this conversation continuing. It ends prematurely when you reach a snag or difficulty, and it's like the very first snag or difficulty you've run into. It's like,
oh yeah,
and you give up already. It's like, no, yes, that's not right. And I'm very blessed to have people in my life, like I said, including Jazz, including you, including my wife, who won't just give up at the first sign of difficulty. The conversation will end eventually, and sometimes it will end with a, well, there's nothing else that can be said here, but at least wherever it ends, it makes sense, and it is in some sense satisfying to everybody involved. It's like, okay, yeah, I can move on from this, that's fine. You know, I don't feel like this is ending before it should. I don't feel dissatisfied emotionally or intellectually here. This seems like a reasonable place for it to stop, and I'm really grateful for that, because I need that, because I guess there are some people, I mean, maybe what I'm about to say is going to sound silly and obvious to you, but I guess there are some people who really aren't interested in having conversations, but I am. I mean, that's the thing I want to do almost all the time, and long ones and deep ones and involved ones. Most people, I shouldn't say most people, lots of people I've met either aren't interested in having a conversation at all, or they're not interested in taking the conversation as far as I'm interested in taking it.
And a lot of times on those kind of subjects, what people think they're interested in and what they're actually interested in aren't the same. So that's a thing to watch out for. But to draw this back to the original behavior we were talking about being careful what you say or whatever, the alternative is you don't mention that belief or that position and then no conversation happens.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. I have definitely had conversations on controversial topics that I'm like, you know what? It would have been nicer just to never talk. That definitely happens.
Oh, yeah, the one.
But in general, the behavior you describe just ensures you will have fewer conversations, it doesn't in any way ensure that the ones you have will be the better ones.
No, that's true. But the only thing I dislike more than not having a conversation is feeling like I tortured someone by trying to have a conversation with them. I just don't want to do that. I would sooner not even engage. I mean, you know, I do want to have conversations. I want that so bad, but it's really is sort of overtaken and overshadowed by my desire to not create a negative experience for someone by me trying to engage them in something they don't want to talk about. So it's a hard thing for me to cope with or to balance out. And, you know, something you frequently say, and other people have said this to me too, is that I probably need to not let, to always let the other person's attitudes and desires be the determining thing. I mean, I count too. So, you know, I can have a say, right, in how this goes. I don't have to just sort of gauge their attitude and whatever and just say, oh, that person doesn't want to talk. Well, then we're done, you know, or that person might be offended by something I say, or they might be irritated by something I say. Well, I won't say anything. I mean, that's not like as you were just pointing out, that's not really always the best strategy to take.
I appreciate the pro William sentiment in that argument, and I think it is a good one. But there is also a pro other people argument that you are missing. Everyone else has just as much right to be interested in learning about you as you are in learning about them.
Yeah.
And you say, I'm just going to ask them stuff and I'm just going to learn about them and I'm going to keep things to me. You are depriving them of the experience that you yourself are seeking out.
But you,
that
right.
You yourself enjoy.
But you understand why that happens because
you believe there's not value in people learning about you.
That's right.
Yes. But you don't get to make the case for what they find valuable.
That's right. And see, that's the mental trick I have to go to, because would I want them to have the same attitude toward me? Here I'm trying to get to know them and ask them questions. Would I be okay with them blocking every attempt I am making because they don't think they're interesting? I would think that's not fair. I think they're interesting. And so they should give, you know, they should let me make that choice. Well, that would be hypocritical for me to not let them make that choice as well. Yeah. So I kind of,
but it is, it is difficult, especially when you already know about yourself. So it's boring. And also when you have self-image issues where you don't find yourself interesting.
I don't know.
Which I think a lot of us suffer from. And I think you in particular sort of suffer from.
Well, do you think so? I mean, I just think I'm objectively not interesting. I mean, people ask questions at the hat.
Whoa, come on. You are smarter than this. You are absolutely smarter than this. You think you're objectively not interesting, and you think that's the reality. You don't think that might be some weird self-esteem issue you have in your head. No, you just, out of all the people out there, you're the boring one.
Oh, I'm sure there's lots of boring ones. I mean, I don't know any other ones.
That's a weird coincidence, no, look, isn't it?
Wait a minute. I feel like I have data, because I'll listen to the podcast and people will ask questions and I will give the most predictable answer almost all the time. That's not interesting.
Wait, predictable to who?
Okay, that's a good question. I think to everybody.
No one is the only way you can develop an opinion, a valid, useful opinion about how interesting you are to other people is based on the reactions of other people. And even then, you have to be very careful because of your own biases. You have no authority in determining if you are of interest to other people.
That's true.
Because you're not in their head.
Although, to be fair, and I'm sure this happens to everybody, not just me, there are people who have made it pretty clear, sometimes by their actual statements, that they don't think I'm interesting.
Yes,
and of course, that doesn't mean I'm uninteresting to everybody. I get that.
No, but that is clearly, if the Tony who is on this podcast was a real person, you would be, it would make sense for you to say, he thinks I'm boring as shit.
Oh, yeah.
Because sure. I believe he has said, you are boring as shit.
Yeah, yeah.
However, the fact that the Tony, who's not on this podcast, has chosen to do almost 500 episodes of a podcast with you is concrete proof that that Tony does not find you boring.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of other explanations for that, but I take your point.
They get quickly into vague conspiracy explanations, and almost right. all of them right. paint me in a much worse light than I'm comfortable being that painted.
You are correct.
Well, my metaphor is a little there, but you
also then I would want to paint you. So yes,
I would hope. Like yeah, no, there are some where I'm just like a super huge dick about it, and that's why I keep you around.
Right. No. Yeah. I don't think that.
No, but this ties into what I'm talking about. Actually, it contradicts what I was talking about earlier. This idea that how interesting you are is determined by other people, and it's how interesting you are to them. I think the contradiction being, again, to throw Seinfeld under the bus. A lot of people loved the show Seinfeld. First of all, that doesn't necessarily say much about him as a person or his intelligence.
Right.
But a lot of people did. A lot of people didn't also. So it's bad to extrapolate. I'm still at the point where I try not to give unsolicited advice to people I don't know. A lot of people I know come to me for advice, and sometimes I even give them advice. Overall, it has seemed beneficial to most of them. I have to keep telling myself that does not mean I'm just good at giving advice to anyone. And just because some people find you boring and have made that clear, does it? And just because, dare I say, you find you boring, doesn't mean everybody finds you boring.
Yeah, I do.
That's but true. I think this is a little bit of a background.
You know, about Seinfeld.
Your picture's been frozen for ages. I'm still hearing you, but your picture's frozen. It's very weird. Now you're just gone. This finally is the podcast I've been waiting for my whole life. Just me and a kind of sad looking still image of William.
Oh. I was going to say about Seinfeld. I was.
There you are. Sort of. Well, there you are.
Trying
were.
To
there.
Say. Jerry Seinfeld's also rich.
Yes.
And rich people get treated in a way by other people. And if these people are treating me this way.
And he's gone. All right, we're going to pause here and see if we can get William back.
Rich, he gets treated.
Hold on, I just now started it again.
Oh.
So we're back, folks. William is with us again.
I was saying, because he's rich, he gets treated a certain way. And I think I've observed this in rich people before, where because they're wealthy and because people want their money, they're going to treat them a particular way. And they mistake that for these people actually thinking they're great.
I think that is a component.
They don't,
and there is a version of that with fame too. There is a thing of people wanting famous people to like them because they're famous. Because we associate both wealth and fame with value as a person in our society, and I'm subject to it as much as anybody. But the problem is when you get there. You the wealthy and famous person, and it goes down to smaller levels. People put you above them in some way. You start to believe you are above them.
Yeah. That's not inevitable, is it? I mean, is that is it? Do you think
I wouldn't think so. I would hope not.
I mean, in the past 300,000 years, for all but the last, say, 10,000.
Hold on a sec.
Put it on the stove.
What?
Give it to you.
Give it to me, please.
The queso spilled.
Oh, shit. Then put it on the stove, please. Thank you. Sorry. Food arrived. All right.
I was saying that only, you know, humans have been around for maybe 300,000 years, and only sometime in the last 10,000 years do you have humans, a small number of humans, ever being treated like this. Like it's an unnatural way for humans to treat one another in a way. So it sort of does raise the question, is this just something that humans, it's just going to be bad no matter what, or is there a healthy way to cope with it?
The problem is there's a fame cycle. Cause I here's what I believe. I'm making this shit up. I believe there are plenty of wealthy, successful people out there who do not develop this attitude.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
We don't ever hear from them because they don't have that attitude. Yeah. So they're not telling the world what they need to know. And consequently, their fame diminishes. So many of them very honestly realize it, are calculating about it. Being obnoxious periodically keeps you famous.
Yeah.
It probably goes down to, if you take all the rich and famous people in the world you've heard of, the ones you know the least about what's happening with them now are probably the ones being the least jackass.
Yeah.
Because Michael Richards and his issue notwithstanding, no other member of the cast of Seinfeld am I like, they're being a jackass, and they're still working, again, Michael Richards notwithstanding, but they're also not writing essays in the New York Times about how people are shitty for wanting to leave New York, you know? They're also not talking about how college kids are too PC because one joke you told went poorly for good reason. That wasn't a great joke.
Well, in Carl Couch...
We are just ripping into Seinfeld tonight.
Carl Couch tried to define the various types of human relationships that you know, human beings have, and one of them was something called the charismatic relationship, and it had all kinds of characteristics, but in particular, it was the best way to really kind of understand what he was talking about, what a charismatic relationship is, would be like... where a person is perceived as, I was about to use an example that would actually apply to a different kind of relationship. Well, it, kind of like a celebrity, maybe, where the where the relationship is, you know, there's a charismatic person, obviously, who or a cult leader, perhaps, who is very charismatic, and they everybody else they're having a relationship with, or the one other person they're having a relationship with, is sort of beholden to them in a way. Now, of course, this is a kind of relationship that's probably existed in various places over all of human history.
Most of my friendships are like this.
But, yeah, whatever. But they were probably pretty rare. It's kind of like the tyrannical relationship. He also defines the tyrannical relationship. These are relationships that are very difficult to sustain on small scales. So they were probably fairly rare. It's probably only in the last 10,000 years can you get these types of relationships to be really large and influential, and, you know, things that you use to build empires with, like the God King, you know. That's obviously trying to establish a charismatic relationship between the whoever the king or queen is and the subjects. Of course, it's sometimes actually tyrannical, or it's charismatic and tyrannical, or it starts charismatic and becomes tyrannical, or what have you.
Well, on a certain scale, it can vary with different portions of the population.
Right. But it's just for the celebrity as we know it is however you want to describe it in modern terms, it's a fairly recent thing, and I'm not surprised that some people struggle with doing it competently, But maybe, I don't know if, like you were just pointing out, we don't really hear from the ones who do handle it competently. So maybe most people do. Maybe only a handful don't.
But we also have to remember that people get famous for something.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost always. But we all have a tendency to want to believe if they're good at that, they must be good overall. Oh, and yeah, sometimes they believe it. Kanye West is a good producer and a decent rapper. That's kind of it. But he is convinced, and a lot of other people are convinced, that he's an awesome fashion designer, that he's a brilliant philosopher, that he could be fucking president. And we hate to deal with this too, because the idea that someone can be really good at comedy and yet be a shitty enough person to rape a bunch of people, those shouldn't go together. The rapist should be shitty at everything because they're a rapist, and the good comedian should be a nice person. But no, we're all good at some shit and bad at some shit. Admittedly, the rapist part is being bad at being a human being. Still, like, I deal with this. I deal with the fact that Neil Gaiman is one of my favorite writers of all time. He does and says some stuff that's bad. I'm dealing with this constantly with Jim Butcher, the author. I love and hate his books so much. I have taken so much from his books and tried to incorporate it into my own writing. And I have taken so much from his books and told myself, be careful never to do this because it sucks.
Right.
And it's really hard. And I'm at the point now where I'm like, yes, I like the Dresden Files. Yes, I know that's not a good thing to say. And no, I am not blind to how much is wrong with it. But I still, like, it's so hard. We don't want to have to compartmentalize other people that we know. I don't want to have to say, I like William in this respect. I don't like William in this respect. Yeah. I enjoy William from this direction. I can't stand William from this direction. And for that to be okay, for me to be like, I really hate this about William, but I'm going to continue being friends with him. Should I? That feels bad. How can I stand to be friends with a person who's terrible in this way? Or he sucks, I'm getting rid of him, but this part of him is really good. Why would you not appreciate that part of him that's really good? No, because he's a bad person because of this other thing. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
It makes us all uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable. I'm sure it makes dealing with me uncomfortable because there is so much to love and so much to hate about me.
You hate to hate about you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like to think, as an introspective person, that I work on the things that are not good and I try and get better at them. But I got a lot of dumb shit.
Hate is a strong word.
Well,
I mean,
I will agree with that, but you also don't get a lot of the worst of it, A, because of the nature of our relationship, and B, because you're a white man. A lot of things wrong with me is I still have hang-ups on sex and race that are buried in my head. And not that I think certain things about women or about people of color, but because completely unconsciously I will say certain types of things or interact with them in ways that I would not with a white man.
Hmm.
And that sometimes I don't notice. And that sometimes it gets told to me, but it only gets told to me when someone is so sick of my shit that they have to yell it at me. My ability to open up and share with anyone is an absolute double-edged sword. Oversharing is a thing, and it's a thing I do constantly. But this is neither here nor there. The point is, we've all got problems, and we've all got things that are good about ourselves. And it's hard, like, we struggle with that internally. It's really hard to struggle with it externally. I can't be dealing with which bits of you I'm okay with and which bits of you aren't. I have to decide. I'm either okay with you or I'm not okay with you. And that's awkward because you're a complicated person. So I find the middle ground for me is that you are my friend and I like you, but I've built a show wherein I just rip you to shreds constantly for an hour a week. And I feel that sort of evens it out.
Okay.
Well, I can't do that. I can't do a podcast with everybody. That would be exhausting.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
Like, this is an incredibly inefficient therapy for me. You see,
I find
helps me deal with exactly one relationship.
I find that the things about a person that, you know, that I can acknowledge are not altogether positive are every bit as interesting as the other things. I mean, too. I mean, even if they annoy me, it's like, but it's still interesting. It's interesting that this person is, this is something they have to cope with or deal with. It's interesting how this particular thing came about in their life. It's interesting how it might contrast or compare to something that I have to deal with, or how it impacts me, or how it makes me a better person, or even sometimes where I think that aspect of the person is not good for me to be around and I either need to deal with it or whatever. But I still find it, I just find everything interesting, I guess, about a person.
And I think that's a healthy attitude, and I understand that. Now the question becomes, is interesting the sole or the primary thing you are looking for in a relationship?
I don't know. That's a
there are people I have known who are very interesting, who I have no desire to ever associate with.
Yeah, okay, so that's a very good question you're asking, because...
And full disclosure, I'm not sure it's one I could answer at this point.
Well,
but you speak as though that was the defining characteristic. So the question is it?
Well, we have to look at the question itself. Looking for in a relationship. Like, I don't know if I'm looking for anything or looking for a relationship. You know, it's like...
Desire. Is desire in a relationship a better phrasing?
I don't know. I mean...
A thing that would give you impetus to continue that relationship.
I think...
Do you have relationships with people because they're interesting?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
And, but the thing is, I find pretty much everybody interesting. So there's got to be, but I'm not interested in having a long-term relationship with everybody. Right. But it, so what sorts it out, sometimes it's just circumstance. Like I'll go through the line at the supermarket and I might really find the person working at the counter there, or the clerk, whatever, ringing up my order, I might really find them interesting. But there's obviously not going to be, I mean, we're not going to exchange numbers or something. You know, you're going to have a brief conversation, you're going to move on.
And presumably, again, to use me, I could behave in such a way that would be interesting, but would provide other negative aspects, offend you, make you feel bad about yourself, something that you would determine, I don't want to pursue this friendship.
Oh, okay, so let's talk about that. So if I felt like, because see, this is sort of a newish thing in my life. This is something that I only kind of started to do after my divorce, is think about, okay, I need to have more self-respect, basically. I need to stand up for myself like I would stand up for somebody else, right? So if someone's treating me in a way that I wouldn't tolerate them treating somebody else, I shouldn't tolerate them treating me that way either. And so if it doesn't matter how interesting or fascinating that person is to me and how much I might want to get to know them or be their friend or anything else, if they're going to treat me disrespectfully or whatever else, I can't allow myself to be in that relationship, because I just can't. I would, when I have been in those kinds of relationships before, I've told myself, well, they don't respect me, but who cares? I don't care if they respect me. I like them. I respect them. They're interesting. We can get along, and that's great. But what ends up happening is I'm still an emotional person, right? I'm still a human being. They are sapping the energy from me by treating me like this.
Yes, no matter
how much I intellectually try to tell myself I don't care, some part of my being cares. And after a while, I am exhausted, and I might hate myself as much as they seem to hate me or whatever else.
Yeah.
So I can't do it.
So interesting is a prerequisite to a relationship for you. And it is presumably a significant factor in determining if you want a relationship, but it is not the sole factor.
No, it seems to me, as you
just said, how they treat you is a factor. And
they would have to treat me pretty bad.
Well,
for me to not be, interested.
Or what if they were hugely, blatantly, awfully racist? I mean,
well,
what if they just sat around wanting to talk about the N-words all the time? Like, I mean, presumably there could be a point at which you're like, this is not, or does that fall under interesting? If you're just going to be harping on that, it's not interesting.
I think what you just said is probably right. It's there's going to come a point where it's, if I know, like a rate, like you're talking, let's say we're talking about a racist, like a neo-Nazi or something.
Yeah.
I suspect, or my belief, I mean, I feel like I know this, but it's really just my opinion, my belief, is that this person is far more interesting than just this. But if interacting with them, I never get farther than that. And it's pretty clear that even if they are more interesting than that, they're never going to share that with me. They're going to have their guard up or whatever. Then, yeah, eventually they're not interesting. And so that's it.
But if they do share other things and you just happen to know they're also a neo-Nazi, that works. Because I can't. I can't do that.
But see, I...
I mean, fair dues. I'm sure this is never an experience you've been faced with, so...
Well,
this is speculation at best.
Let me put it like this. Okay. There's a fellow, and I don't remember his name. He's a black fellow, and he befriends, he makes a habit of befriending
neo-Nazis
and KKK.
Yeah. I remember that guy.
And, I think that when I hear him talk about it, it sounds similar to what I would probably think and feel and do in a similar circumstance. Now, he kind of has a goal, right? He thinks if he gets to know them or whatever, that maybe he can get them to change their mind about this or whatever. And I think maybe, even though I don't, I think that there would be a little bit of that thinking at the back of my mind, not so much like, oh, I'm going to be the savior and help this person get rid of this, but the thinking that maybe if
you can be a positive influence. I mean,
yes, that's what I mean. I can be a positive influence. That's right.
Essentially, potentially nudge their perspective a little bit.
Cause I don't like to think of myself as like, oh, I'm going to save this guy from this thing. It's more of a, this might be a mutually beneficial thing. And the part that will be beneficial to this person will be, they'll get out of this thing. But also there would be a limit to that, to where I would think, okay, this is not a mutually beneficial thing at all. This isn't, they're not being helped. They're not getting anything out of this relationship. I'm not getting anything out of this relationship. And life is too short for two people to sit around having a not mutually beneficial
relationship. Well, and there's a respecting of one's humanity.
Yeah. Right.
Which I think is tied in here. If you go into it saying, I'm becoming friends with this person to save them, that's not respecting who they are. That's the equivalent of, I'm going to date this person who has terrible problems, but I'm going to fix them. Same thing.
Yeah.
Going and saying, you are a human, and there are things about you I don't like, and I would like to think that my friendship will be an influence on that, but that can't be the sole reason.
Right.
But what you're describing essentially the very nature of those beliefs, especially if they are pushed on you over and over again, is disrespecting of your humanity and, of course, of a lot of other people's humanity.
That's right. Which that's,
and therefore, I mean, the contract becomes null and void, essentially. I didn't mean it in a judgy way at all. I'm envious of that. I have hit a point where I'm like, I don't know that I could be friends with someone who wants to vote for Trump. And I consider that a failing on my part. Because I do judge them to such a degree and am so angry about it.
Well, I do think
my brain is like, you are less valuable of a person to me because of that. And I don't know if it's ignorance or stupidity or downright cruelty, but there is something wrong with you and I cannot associate with it. That is what the back of my head is saying, and I feel awful about it. But at this point, I'm stuck with it.
Well, I think they're also, though, I mean, one of the things we're talking about in terms of having relationships with these types of people with whom you have deep disagreements, moral disagreements, especially, we're talking about limits, right? There's you have to have a limit. There has to be a line past which, as I was saying before, this isn't doing anybody any good. You know, this, I'm not getting anything out of this relationship with you. You're not getting anything out of this relationship with me. And to me, all you're saying is you draw that line in this place, or I might draw the line in this place. And I don't think there's really a superiority as to this line versus this line. I think it's just a personal thing. Some people can draw it here and some people can draw it there. You might be able to draw your line with this person over here, and maybe I can't draw my line with that person that far. Or whatever.
Well, but it's, I think just, it's, I don't like to have to be involuntarily drawing it. I don't want to be drawing my line there. Oh. And it's a real thing. There are people, admittedly, they're not close friends, but like friends of family and stuff, that I've had the fortune to not see since 2016, but I have learned that they are. And I hate harping on this example. This is not the only example, but it's just easy, prevalent one. Right. They are Trump supporters, and I'm like, I don't intend to interact with them again. And if we are put in a situation where we are, I will be minimal and civil to them and try and get out of the conversation as quick as I can. And before, we weren't good friends, but we were acquaintances, and I liked seeing them and having a little chat. And now I'm like, I don't ever want to do that again.
Well, another thing, though,
that's me drawing the line, but it's not where I want to draw the line. It's where I feel I have to draw the line. I don't like that.
I understand that. I get it. I think too, though, I mean, I've experienced this with some people where, like you, the line is drawn not where I would like fully consciously draw it, but the reason it's sort of, as you say, involuntarily drawn there is because, again, as you're kind of pointing out, I have some emotional issues that don't really even have anything to do with them. But like, I know if I try to engage in a conversation with these people, it won't be a good one because my emotional stuff will get in the way and suddenly the conversation is going to be crap. I know that. I know that that's how I'm going to respond. So to spare myself and them really from that thing that wouldn't be entirely their fault, I might as well just not engage there at all.
That absolutely sounds like something you would do. That's not at all how my brain works in this.
Really? You don't think so?
I don't give a shit about sparing them from something.
Well,
I don't like them. Yeah. I don't like them now because of this one thing. I consider them bad people.
Oh, well.
That's what I'm saying. And I just went through explaining how that's not a thing that works or is real. And I'm saying I still do it. Also, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast that does its intro right at the end. I'm Tony.
Oh, I'm William, and this is episode 493.
You've been listening to
episode 493.
I'm not going to explain what the podcast is about because it's done, and this isn't what it's about.
It's not even what we do.
I will say, even though we didn't do a question this week, we need more questions, people. Get in there. Write some stuff. The hat is getting depressingly light, and I want to know you're still out there. It was a very quiet week on the blog, so I want to know you're there. Hopefully, We brought up a lot of interesting shit this week. We'll see. Maybe it's boring to all of them. We don't know. But we share it with you out of respect for your humanity, for you to decide yourself how boring we are. And that's what makes us good people. Also, I'm really hoping one of you is just like a diehard Seinfeld fan and you just rip into me on the blog. I think that would be hilarious. So do that. Tell us your thoughts on how boring William is.
Yeah, definitely do that. You know, before just a second ago, I wasn't trying to invalidate your experience. I was wondering if maybe you're not as judgy as you think you are. But
yeah, but no, I absolutely got that. But no, I am as judgy as
okay. Okay, that's fine. I wasn't trying to tell you something different.
No, and it is that thing of, you know, like we are all more than just our political views and all that. And deep down, we all want to say, and I have believed that many a time. I just can't right now.
Yeah, I hear you.
And we all come from different places and, you know, race. I have talked to people who used to be really homophobic and who not in the slightest now. And they talk about how they were raised and what they experienced and why they felt that way and why they don't now and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Speaking of
the journey,
we finished watching season 2 of Pose. It's an amazing show. I love that show so much. I think it has to go up there. I think I now have 2 all-time favorite TV shows. Pose and The Good Place.
Wow.
I think it is up there. Yeah, now the 4th season is coming up. But watch Pose. Watch the seasons of Pose. It's an amazing show. Unbelievable show. The rest of you write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com and tell us on the blog your thoughts about all this bullshit we've been spewing. And I'm going to go eat my supper. So y'all go do something else for a week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.